Hello.
Hey.
How you doing, man?
How are you?
Not bad, not bad.
First, I'd like to... quieter spot. My son is...
Man, tell me about it.
All over the place.
Your son? You say your son?
I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you fine, man. Can you hear me?
Hello, hello.
Can you hear me?
Okay, now I can. I live on Fox Island, so it's like a crazy area. The Wi-Fi out here sucks, so my phone is... I was literally talking to my neighbor, and he's like right next door, and our phones were cutting out. And I'm like, man, I can just come outside and just talk to you.
Man, I appreciate you taking out the time, joining me and doing this.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I feel like you think like me. It's for a good cause, man. Let people know a little bit more about us on other than behind the table.
Right.
So you live on Fox Island? I live over on Lakewood, man. I was over by Chambers Bay. I was gonna go hang out in Chambers Bay, do this somewhere quiet, man. But it's not quiet there right now.
Yeah. Oh. I didn't know that. How come we never crossed paths? That's weird.
Bro, I was gonna get into that. First, let's tell the folks that you and I, we don't know each other. We just met. We never even really met. We just got online through Facebook. I heard of you. I was born in Wyoming. Ended up in Nashville, and that's when I started cooking. And then I worked for, I don't mind saying Shogun in Nashville, because they're... Anyway, Papa Choi passed away. I don't know if you know who he was, but he had 9 Shoguns before he passed away. So I worked for him for 9 years straight, or 8 years straight. And after he passed away, I got divorced, and I just started moving, man. And mostly around the South, Alabama, Mississippi, around that area. And then when I finally got divorced or whatever, I kind of wanted to go to Texas, go see my family. And I've always wanted to come out to Washington, because of Nirvana, Soundgarden. I'm real big in that scene. So I came out here, and here I am. But through my travels getting over here, I've worked all over coming here. And I heard about you in Billings, Montana, because I went to Billings, Montana to be close to my folks in Wyoming.
Wow.
And yeah. So Vegas Mike was there, man. Vegas Mike.
Oh, man.
So he's the one that turned me on to you, bro. And I was like, who the fuck's this Tattoo Mike? And he, in the Hibachi show, in the, what is it? Is it the Hibachi Showdown or the Teppanyaki Showdown? What's it called exactly?
Teppanyaki Takedown.
There you go. I apologize. Teppanyaki. I'm not gonna go there. All right, wasn't he sitting down watching you, and then he said something like, I'll see you in Vegas or something like that?
Yes.
Okay. Who was that guy that you were going up against?
So that was my friend. His name is Daryl. And
where's he at?
I don't even know where he's at right now. I talked to him.
That's a bad boy too, bro. That's a bad boy.
Year. I don't know where he's at now. He's on Facebook. I'm sure in a few clicks I can find out what he's doing. He's been pretty silent on social media. He's a good friend. He's like super. I love that guy. He's a great chef, and I think he was doing.
He looks like a quiet guy though.
No, he was. You know, it's funny. We worked just for a bit in passing, but we just stayed friends. And he was cooking at another restaurant. We worked at this restaurant with different locations, and he was just one of the other guys there. And we needed a chef to, like, I mean, there's
why did Mike throw down?
He ended up being the chef and not Vegas Mike. So I don't know, like, how deep you want to get into that of how the whole show came about, but it was.
I mean, I was going to ask you later down the road, but I mean, I'm glad you hit it. I was going to ask you, a little bit again about me. I started in 99, but like I said, I just ran into you like about 5 years ago. I was never in big on watching like or making YouTube. So I mean, I never went that route. And then when I saw you guys, I saw that Takedown, it kind of opened my eyes, and I was like, wow, man, So, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's how a lot of my friends know you, man. And
cool, yeah.
Yeah, they... and so know, there it is.
When that whole teppanyaki takedown came out, it was my very first taste of like hate on my social media on like a big scale, because when we released that, the comments were open, you know, right from the get-go, and I thought like I put this video out there and I thought like everyone would be like, dude, you're the man, and it was a lot of like, look at this dude, he looks like, look at his hair, and you know what I mean? It was, I was actually kind of, it was the first time I ever felt bummed out a little bit about something.
Hate, that
I
did. Hate, 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 hate.
You know, I was like, I go, man, there's actually a lot of people who don't really like me. Cause then you're like, this is when social media is more open and up even more, you know, cause it's like 7 years ago now. So like, I started to actually comb deep and see other chefs, you know, on Facebook. And I was like, man, a lot of these guys don't like me, but I've never really met them before. They've only just seen. But then I get it, because a lot of this stuff in my earlier time, I was pretty arrogant. So I get it, you know. So I mean,
all of us, bro. You know, there's not one watch chef arrogant. You know? There's not one of us that's not arrogant deep down. Otherwise, right? You know.
That's what I thought they would appreciate. There's someone out there just being like super arrogant about it, you know.
And no, no.
That's what I thought people would appreciate, but a lot of people took it personal because, you know, because I'm like, oh yeah, I'm the best, you know, and. I caught a lot of hate from that video at while, but for my career, the video really helped me out, because a lot of the restaurants that I was applying for were looking at what you've done on social media, you know, especially Roku and Hollywood, you know, that they found me from the guy looking for a chef was on YouTube looking for famous teppanyaki chefs, and he just came across my video. And by this time I was working at Nobu in Hawaii, so I kind of had that credibility going. And mm-hmm. So getting the job in Hollywood, they were like, we loved your video. And I was like, right on. This video really helped my career. And that was the best job I ever nailed ever in my career, was the one in Hollywood. And that's why I'm like, that video definitely served a purpose. In the beginning, it made me eat humble pie a little bit, but like.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? So, yeah. So.
Of course. Yeah. That's what I was saying. That was one of the questions that I was going to ask you, is like how you got into it, what made you want to do it. And then, yeah, those haters. So, like I said, I've been around and I am not talented, nowhere near talented as you are, bro. But, you know, I hold my own everywhere I've been. I worked in Vegas at Geisha Steakhouse over on North Decatur Boulevard. I was down there 5 years ago when Mayweather and Pacquiao fight. Different scene. I liked it. I just kind of wanted it on my resume.
Crazy business. Big numbers. Good tips. And
huge numbers. Yeah, good times. Yeah. Another thing I want to touch base with you was on the money. Like over here, let me tell you a place I've worked at in Washington. I don't like working at Bocce in Washington just because of the, I'll tell you where I work. Bellevue, Olympia.
Fujiyama.
I'm not going to say no name. I don't want to get in trouble. Yeah, you already know.
I won't say name, but
and over,
I know where you're at.
That crazy chick over in Lacey, you know her?
The one that is from California on her phone.
Yeah, something like that.
On that actually runs the kitchen.
Uh-huh. So the first time I came out here was over in Puyallup, over there on off of Meridian.
Yeah, Iron Chef, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
I like them.
So that
I'll
was the first.
Their name, because I never.
They're
had
good folks. The Moons are very, very good folks.
I never had a problem with the owner there. I never worked there, because what she was offering pay was pretty much what I was already getting already, and where I was at the time, I was already like chilling. So I wouldn't want to have to go to a place and like, oh man, I have to be all good boy.
$30 more. $30 more. $40 more. Yeah.
Yeah.
And and then I worked over in. Sound Center, South Center.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, so, but one thing I've noticed about Washington is, and I was over in Pullman also, but one thing I've noticed about Washington, man, is they hold your tips for like a week and then give them to you later. Over in the South, man, we would get that daily if you wanted to. The head chef and the head server would count it out daily, and you get your cash that night if you wanted it, or you'd be there for the next day.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't be taxed. A lot of it wouldn't be taxed. And over here, man, and it seems like everywhere pays the same over here.
Yeah.
It's the same amount. Man. Can't max out.
Bro, you are preaching to the choir, man. Like, I'm literally on record telling other chefs, like, for some reason, it doesn't matter how bomb of a chef you are or where you go.
I would rather be a server.
You always end up making $5,000 a month. I mean, it's like, you know, and like, and when I first worked at Sakura's, that's what I was used to, was getting tips literally at the end of the night. They counted out the tips. And when you're a young chef living off that cash, you needed that. So then when you go to other restaurants where they're holding tips, they, I mean, that's the, that, man, dude, man, I can rant forever. Like, owners will always,
what do you do? What do you do, man? What
your salary should be, you know? And so, you know what I mean? They're like, oh, well, we'll pay you $1,400, you know, a month, but then you could make up to $3,000 in tips. And it's like, well, what you think I can make? And that's what sucked was, you know, when you're a credible chef, you know, rock starring it out, I was making rock star side tips. This was the North Dakota days. I worked at Kobe's over there. I was, man, I was crushing it in, you know, side, you know, tips, you know, and
Kiki.
Yeah, Kiki. Yeah. And, you know, and shout out to Kobe's. I love them, man. They're like, they got me my start, man. Like, I wanted to get back in, man. That's another story in itself, dude. How I ended up
I was there. Shoot. 5 years ago? Six, no. 5 years ago, I was in Vegas. I can't even remember, dude. As many places I've been. That's funny.
You know what? Kobe. I always tell chefs, like, if you ever survive Kobe's, that's literally a rite of passage with me. Like, you, I understood, because I worked in Washington, and then suddenly when I made it over to North Dakota, I was, like, stunned how big of the numbers we had to cook. Like, I was like, oh, when I was in Washington, like, oh, 8 people, that's a lot of people. And then I get to Kobe's and they're like, you got to cook 30 people and you do it all night long, you know? And it's like, you know, a bunch of noodles on the grill, and it's just like, everyone's getting smashed drunk that you're supposed to give them alcohol. I didn't know that. I was getting in trouble for not sake bombing people. And it was crazy. I literally came back from North Dakota a beast. Like, I went there, I survived. And when I came back to Washington, I was ready to crush. That's kind of like my forte now. I'm really good at big numbers, you know? Like,
How old were you when you were in Washington?
God, so I started cooking in 90. It was my senior year of high school. So I started washing dishes in 92. So that made me a junior in high school. I graduated in 93. So 93, I was in the beginning of the year, I was training chef. And then I was cooking by like little, I for my graduating class, dude. I literally had to walk, get my diploma, because I did it in the daytime at the Tacoma Dome. And then from there,
no,
I had to go to work. And then I had to cook for my prom parties. Graduation party, you know, everyone. So it was senior. It was good. Missed out on a lot of childhood, like, you know, like, I didn't, you know, hang out with high school kids and really young, you know, hanging out with salty, you know. And, you know, slightly scared of my owner at the time, because he was just like my lifeline. So, you know, like, you know, it was just crazy, you know, like it was just weird, you know, like, I don't know how I just kind of got thrusted into it, but I love it. You know, it was like exactly what I wanted, you know, like I didn't know I wanted to be a chef until I started washing dishes. And I come from a generation of chefs. My father's a chef and all that stuff. And I knew I wanted to do some form of cooking, but I remember I applied for this restaurant in Tacoma. It's now Samurai's. And I remember I walked in through the back, and then I walked to the front. I see these guys like juggling, and I'm like, oh shit, man, like, this is cool, you know, because I'm a huge fan of Kung Fu 70s movies. So I kind of saw that vibe going on. So I was like, I want to be a chef. And I'll give you the quick story how I became a chef. At the time, they would not train me. They were like, no, we don't need to be a chef. And then one day, a lot of the chefs quit, like, all at once. It was, like, the 4th of July.
What were they?
What's that?
What were they? What were they? Indonesians?
No, so now that was the, this is the new, that's the new people in there. So back then it was a Korean chef, it was two Thai chefs and a Cambodian chef. And then me, I was their dishwasher. And then so like,
what are you,
I
bro?
Was asking to be a chef and they were like, no, you're not Asian enough. And then like all the chefs walked out and then the head chef was like, he looked over at me and he was like, congratulations, you're now a chef. You know, like, cause you know, I knew how to do it. I was their kitchen help. Or,
yeah.
And I, so I,
you saw it.
I literally, and the guy was just like, just cook the chicken all the way. That's what I got to do. Rule. and that was my introduction to teppanyaki. It was never some like, oh, they trained me and he took me aside and no, man. It was pretty rough.
And look at you now, bro. Look at you now. How did you go about marketing your sauce? Which what's it called?
The orange sauce. So okay, every restaurant has, I'm glad this is getting out there so people get to hear the truth. So every Teppan restaurant has their version of the yum. In Tacoma at the restaurant at the time, we call it the orange sauce. And so since I was the kitchen helper, I was in charge of making the sauce. So I knew the recipe very, very well. And the orange sauce was like the big hit of Sakura's. Like even still to this day, I just did a party a couple of days ago. They literally drink the sauce, man. Like people love this sauce from like, this is in the 90s. And so like I carried this recipe with me my entire career. I would do like cooking competitions and I'd whip the sauce out at the very end and like win. And even I had sushi guys like kind of steal the recipe from me a little bit because I'd make it with like a family meal.
Always.
They're like, what is this sauce? I go, this is what I've been making my whole life. And so when I came back and started my cooking career here in Washington, everyone was like, you need to jar that stuff. You need to market it and sell it. And then I was like, I should. And then I just knew like, because I watched a lot of Shark Tank. So I was like, I watched a lot of like branding labels and stuff like that.
It's there.
So I reached out and, you know, hired literally a comic book artist. His name is Travis Bundy. I think he's local. He's like in Lakewood. And he literally just sketched it out in like 30 minutes and sent me three rough sketches. And I was like, this is exactly what I'm looking for. Because he wanted to do like, you know, that. Because I said 70s Kung Fu kind of theme, that kind of like poster vibe. And he literally drew up the poster or the label. And then the sauce side was different because it's a lot of like, you have to get it tested. You have to go through a co-packer, like all the nutrition values done on it. So it is sort of a process, but once you get that process going, it's super fun. And then by this time I'm simultaneously marketing the sauce with my business. I'm doing a bunch of parties. So it's literally, you know how like record people sell records out of their trunk? That's what I was doing with my sauce at these parties, you know? And then I had a really good relationship with the local grocery stores around here because I knew them when they were kids.
Tacoma boys!
When they were kids. And so like, they were like, yeah, we'd love to have your sauce in the store. So that sort of snowballed. And then a lot of, because I'm pretty known on international teppanyaki pages. So a lot of those chefs were like, hey, send me your sauce. So now I'm shipping it everywhere all over the world into like Egypt and Jordan and all these crazy places. So like a lot of these chefs got curious about it. And it's a lot about branding and marketing. You know, a lot of people are like, you know, like, what's the secret to your business? It's like, it's not so much working hard on just the tricks. You have to brand everything, brand your sauce, brand your labels and brand you and be professional. And you know, I make it look easy, but it's, you know, there's a lot of moving parts behind the scenes that people don't know, you know? So it's, yeah. Nope. So, and then the brown sauce came real quick because once I did the orange sauce, like I said, once the process is done, it's fun to do it. So I knew the brown sauce would be easier because it's an easier version. It's actually like cheaper to make than the orange sauce. Cause the orange sauce is a lot of like sakis and mayos and all these things. And the brown sauce is literally just like a teppanyaki, like teriyaki with a bunch of ginger in it and plum. So that's that. And so the label was already like, I told the guy, make another label, and he did it. And I was like, cool. And that happened real quick. And so they kind of go together, and I was already in the store. So they already took my brown sauce in, no problem. But I was already in. And so that's the story.
I looked for it at Tacoma Boys. I heard I could find it
there. So Tacoma Boys, both locations, the Harbor Greens, they carry a lot of it. And then I'm in like the smaller stores, like the Zogs Brewery out here on the Fox Island at Finn Homes, and I'm at the Thunderbird out there in Puyallup. Shout out Thunderbird. Woo, love you guys.
So if my friends and family wanted to order it, how would they go about ordering it?
They just email me, and then they just tell me what they want, and then I do that priority shipping, and I even cover the cost of that. I just pack it and ship it.
Might as well throw that website out, bro.
So, like, it's love, man, and it's, yeah, I love that stuff. Yeah, thank you. I'm glad you're promoting, man. Thank you. You know, like,
what's your website, bro?
FlyingKnives.com.
FlyingKnives.com. There, you heard it. FlyingKnives.com. Which one, what sauce does Adam Sandler like best?
So, little backstory on him, and this is totally, people don't know this.
Yeah. Fill him in, so please.
How I know him, I would say we're pretty well.
Stay where you're at, because we got a good connection. You vibed out just like a second ago, so I can't wait to hear this story. Go ahead, bro.
What people don't know is my cousin is married to Kevin James.
No way.
So my cousin's married to Kevin James. They have their kids. Kevin James' kids and Adam Sandler's kids hang out all the time. So my cousin, her sister, her name's Taz, she watches literally all their kids. So he's sort of like a family friend. When I was working at Roku, you know, because I see them, they hang out with their kids. So when I was working at Roku, Adam Sandler would come in, and then he would ask for, like, hey, because the first time he came in, it was kind of by chance. And then I told him, I was like, hey, did you know that my cousin is married to Kevin James? And I know you guys are friends because they do all those shows together. And he was like, well, cousin, Taz, she watches my kids too. And I was like, yeah.
So, he just seems like a cool dude too,
He would come in and just request me. He did it 3 times. He'd come in and he would come in even like at earlier times, like before we were pre-open. So he'd literally, because at Roku, there's only like 4 grills there. So he would have access to that little dining area by himself. And I'd come out and, you know what I mean? And we would just talk, and he's just a really cool guy, you know? And
he seems like it.
Super he cool, seems like. And he would talk to me. I was like, it was funny because I lived off Laurel Canyon Road, and he would film movies all around that area, and I would talk to him about that. I'm like, I was just watching you because he Sandy Wexler movie. At the same time I was living in Hollywood, he did a scene
one. I know exactly where you're at.
So I'm literally watching him like, hey, there's Adam Sandler filming a scene right outside my house. And this is the scene I think with, I guess, because Jennifer Hudson was coming out of the apartment, and he was down there, and I mean, it's a tiny little scene, but the full production. He's got
50
people, tour buses, like a catering service out there, like right behind him. And I'm like, damn, this is crazy.
What movie was that, do you think?
It's called Sandy Wexler. It's on Netflix. It's been out like 4 years now, probably. And I like watching it because they film it like all over Hollywood. And he basically plays like this like record producer or like a entertainment producer trying to get big and all that stuff. And it's pretty funny. It's, you know, Netflix funny. It's good.
Did you ever make it out to Ventura? I worked over in Camarillo when Schwarzenegger was elected.
No.
Governor. I still remember.
I passed through Ventura.
I worked over in
Camarillo. When I worked at Roku, we would do like spot locations. So we would do like private events here and there. We did one out in Ventura. Uh-huh. I can't remember even the name of that place. And it was just like a little office. Like, what the hell was it? Oh, it was during Christmas time. It was like an employee party. And it was somewhere out in Ventura. And it was just like,
I liked it out there, man.
And that was cool about Roku, because that kind of got my idea of what I was doing now with Flying Knives was like, oh, the traveling teppanyaki. Because Roku, we were doing it more or less for not the money. It was more like promotional stuff. Like, oh, here we are in Hills, and we're doing a news segment with, because they would do me simultaneously with like a sushi guy on like live TV. So I'm seeing how we have this grill, how they're doing. I'm like, hey, I could do this at home. You know, like it was sort of like the birth of the idea of Flying Knives. Like, I knew I wanted to be a private chef back home. I didn't know what kind of chef I wanted to be, because I'm like, I'm not just teppanyaki. I was doing like fine dining and catering, and I was like doing it all. And but teppanyaki has always been like my passion, you know. So I was always like, I can do this at home. And, you know, why not? And so yeah, that was sort of the birth of it. So
how's the house party go? Do the people buy the food and you cook it up? Or do they give you a certain amount of cash and you just take care of it? Because I did my uncle was the mayor of a small town in Wyoming, where I'm originally from. And I was working in Colorado Springs, and that was the second time I ran into Vegas money. yeah. So.
Do you hear me laughing every time I hear his name? Like, did I lay
down? Yeah.
Can I clear the air with him? You know, because a lot of people are.
If you want to, bro. I ran into him. I don't know where he's at, dude. I don't know where he's at.
I want to say this because I've heard. Okay, so I love Vegas Mike. This is for the record. This is for the tip-on community if they're listening.
I love him too, but
for the record,
I love
Vegas Mike, and he is definitely one of the most talented chefs I have ever come across. We thank God we have never worked simultaneously in the same restaurant, because we probably would have killed each other. You know, it's like we are both that alpha, and rightfully so. He is a great chef. So that being said, let me clear, and this is how the teppanyaki takedown happened. Originally, it was supposed to be a team of us. And my friend Seggy, he was sort of like, it was called the S Crew. And it was essentially me, Vegas Mike, and a few other guys. It was supposed to be like, we go to a restaurant and we battle their best chef. And so we actually pitched this idea to the top video company in Seattle. And they were like, we don't understand. We don't get it. Film a rough version. So we went to Mizu's out in Covington. And this is where I ended up battling Daryl, finally, in the original, in the final shot. We did this really lame version. And then we took it to the producers in Seattle. They watched it. And it was all of us doing tricks and kind of mocking each other. And this is the true story. Swear to God, God is my witness. They literally are like, we love the idea, but we'd rather center around Mike. Mike's more personality, you know, like regardless if I wasn't as the greatest at tricks, I was carrying like, I can talk, you know, like I can carry video. So
Mike's not a talker.
That caused some resentment. And so a lot of guys got pissed off because we were pitching a lot of guys reached out to us. A lot of guys who rightfully are technically better chefs than I am. You know what I mean? It's like, I'll lay it out there right now. I'm
why do you say that?
The best chef. There's so many chefs out there that are so ridiculously better than me, but I just know how to like brand myself and be professional and just not try to showboat too much and carry a business. So this show happened. So when we
like did my takedown,
by this time, I think Vegas was a little mad because it wasn't him, because he was there when we pitched it in Seattle, and I could tell he was just like, hey man, looks like it's about you. Looks like, you know, you better be fucking good because you suck, you know? And like, and I didn't say anything because I did suck, you know? But I'm like, well, I can get better. It's just TV, man. Like, it's not that serious, you know? It's like, whatever, you know? And so that was the beginning of that. To get funding, because then this is all flown out. I ended up in North Dakota. So in North Dakota, I ended up falling into an investor who believed in the show. I was pitching him Teppanyaki Takedown. He put a budget out there, and that's when we got to film the episodes on a production budget. We flew back to North Dakota. I battled a Blue Ninja out there. I found him off Rachel. Okay, so I don't know about Blue Ninja, because I heard, you know, like, you know, I don't know if he likes me or not. I kind of heard like, you know, Vegas Mike was kind of resentful. I kind of heard through some people like, Blue Ninja doesn't like you. And I'm like, oh, I thought we were friends. But so we found him because we were on the internet and he was on Rachel Ray with his brother. And he's one of the greatest chefs I ever seen too. I'll lay it out there. Blue Ninja's bomb. And so we reached out to him and God bless, Blue Ninja stepped up. We flew him out to North Dakota and we battled and he killed it. He was great, you know? And so that happened.
Where's Blue Jeans from?
No, exactly. I knew, you know, at one point, I know he was at Fujiyama's in Olympia.
Sounds like a white guy.
He put out one of the sickest videos with his brother. They did like this tag team thing, and I knew it was from Olympia. I recognized the restaurant. I worked there, and that I'll say it to this day. I was like, "Fuck, man, this guy's badass, man!" Like, and that's what we wanted for Teppanyaki Takedown. We wanted the best guys to come on and bring it. And Vegas was definitely one of the, because Vegas and work. He was going to be one of the last guys I battled in the very end. And at my time, I'm just literally training myself, thinking I'm just going to just train myself and get better. And I mean, I literally had Teppanyaki training hours with my friend Seggy, where we would just bang hours and hours of unsung work that people don't know. Absolutely. That I did. I was just, you know, all the cuts and the hours and just training for this thing to try to look somewhat like I can carry myself with these great chefs. And I would just figure it out as I go, you know, and that's how it all happened. And then it just, you know, nothing much. At the time when the show released, we thought it was going to go mainstream right away. And then it just kind of fizzled out and not much happened with it. But I would still use it on my resumes, and it would technically,
absolutely,
my career, it would be awesome, you know. So that's the story of Teppanyaki Takedown. I'm so glad I finally got to get to clear the air with that. So
I'm glad I got to hear it, man. I wanted to know the backstory also. There's a lot of people that wanted to know.
That in North Dakota in itself was, that's another story in itself. But yeah, like, so there we go. So like, and so I'm just clearing the air saying like, I love those guys. I, you know, like, and then through time, I you know, a lot of Teppan chefs would reach out to me, and I always talk with chefs. Like, you know, through time, the haters kind of stopped. And like, because I always give advice. People are like, hey, man, what do you do with this? How do you do the fire? What do you use? And I'm like, hey, I use this, man. No worries. And then I would hear like, yeah, I heard this guy was talking a lot of shit about you. And then like, I don't care. Like, I'm like 45, dude. Like, the least thing I have to worry about is some chef who hates me. Like, that's our career, dude. Like,
yeah.
You know, I low level hate on chefs.
He never bad.
I low level hate on them, but that's because I respect them that much. You know, like, I'll give a shout out right now. Teppan Danielson, definitely, technically, I'll put him out there as one of the best, technically best chefs out there. Like,
Danielson, that's he. What's he going?
And he's on Teppanyaki International. Where, and he's Vegas running his own business in Vegas. And
bam, Vegas. And right, that's right.
When he released one of his videos, I'm like, damn, I know this guy's gonna do something crazy. And some other guys too. There's a lot of great guys out there, but I think people misread my hashtags, you know, because I'm like, I'm the GOAT and blah blah blah. But then I kind of feel like I've put in 30 years almost of this game. I think at some point I'm allowed to be an MVP at some point, you know? So, you know, and my business speaks for itself.
It's game, man.
I'm busy. Yesterday I booked 5 parties. June's booked. July's completely booked. And I'm like, I'm more busier now than I was last summer. And last summer I was stunned how busy I got, where I was forced to hire help. So, I mean,
What's Mother's Day mean? Looking like for you? What's Mother's Day this. Looking like
so
for
I
you?
I heard you were busy. Friday, 12, this Saturday for 16, and then Mother's Day is another one for 12. And the one for 12, I just did their party just a few weeks ago, and it was posted on social media. They're one of my regulars, you know, like, I mean, I did a party a couple days ago. I posted it, and I knew, I was like, hey, I'm just going to say I'm open for Mother's Day because people might think I'm not. 30 minutes after that post, my regular, I love him to death, he was like, hey man, you want to come back out on Mother's Day? And he wants to eat nice and early, 3 o'clock, you know? And that's like, he's like, it's like the perfect customer, like super friendly. And that's the beauty of my business. You know, like, this is my career coming full circle. I've built a good reputation with my customers throughout my entire career. I never burned bridges with everywhere I worked. So when I came back and started my business, my karma level was off the charts because people were like, oh, dude, I want you to cook for my kids. Because I remember when I was a kid and you cooked for me, you know, I remember that. And I want you to do that. And I, you know, because I haven't really changed my format. I'm pretty much the same guy I was when I started cooking at like 17. You know, like, it's, you know, I'm just a little bit older, a tad bit wiser, but I'm still like more passionate than ever, even more now because I'm not confined to these restaurant owners where like, hurry up, hurry up, hurry up. And you know what I mean? And so
there's, I have two buddies. Actually, one's a real good friend of mine. His name's Chad. I'll be doing one with him here coming up. And then another dude over his name, you probably know him, Joe Cook over in Alabama.
Yeah.
I love the way he, I love, there's nothing I love more than a Southern accent on an Asian. Know. That's the funniest thing.
I know them all.
So, so you know Chad?
Who is he on Facebook?
It's Chad Winters. He doesn't know by anything. He goes by Chad Winters. What he does.
Chef, I probably do know him.
He does a lot of Instagram, but his I've known him since I started, man, 20 years. Like, he started a little bit before I did. And long story short, he's got a little business called Rice Rice Baby. And he goes to concerts, goes to music festivals all over the United States, big places, sold out stadiums. Kind of like a Sturgis, man. A dude that I used to work with.
It's weird how I never heard of you.
I don't know. Chad Winters. I've never done any videos. I know a lot of dudes, man. I've been a lot of places. I don't think I've even touched base with you on the half, but this isn't about me, this is about you. But yeah, I thought about that too, man, like how we never cross paths. Like, we've obviously worked. I am working at where you started out, from what you said. I mean, I'm working over off at 38th behind KFC. I don't want to say the name of the restaurant. I don't know how
oh my god, but you're there.
Yeah. That's where I'm at right now, but I messed up my arm putting that gate on the front door. I don't know if y'all did that when you were a kid. But
you might see remnants.
Shut up, did you? Really?
You'll see it all. They did.
Bro, you got. I get asked.
I cannot believe you're there, dude.
No, customers still out. They're like,
you know what? No, okay, so well, okay.
This
is for the record. I have nothing against Samurai's. I have nothing against anyone there. And I know the chefs, and I will not say their names just for out of respect, because I still love those guys. I think for some reason, and this is just what I tell myself so I can feel better, I guess, by myself. A lot of chefs there, or in passing, have a little resentment for me because I feel like they kind of wish they were doing what I was doing, what I'm doing now. I think I'm sort of feeling like I'm spearheading this movement where, like, we don't need these owners. If you're worth your salt and if you're professional enough, any chef, if I can fucking do it, man, there's so many better chefs out there that can crush the competition, that can kill it. And so, like, I kind of feel like a lot of these chefs are sort of like, I hear it all the time. For as many chefs as I hear, like, oh, you're an awesome chef, I hear twice as many be like, yeah. So, and I think it's nothing that I've never fought with any chefs. I never had any issues. I think it's just sort of like, I made it out of that. Like, I'm sort of cooking on my own terms. Like, I'm what Teppan can be. That's one of the hashtags, the future of cooking. I mean that hashtag. You know, because I feel like, you know, like, I feel like the transitioning world of Teppan is different. When I work in Hawaii, I'm literally working in a restaurant where there's no walls. I'm literally looking out at the ocean, watching whales breach. And I'm thinking, this is another trigger where I'm like, wouldn't this be cool to do this at home? It's someone's house. Like, I'm thinking, cook for rich people, because rich people will tip you good. And if they're rich, they have a nice house. They have a nice house. They have a view. Wouldn't it be cool to, like, cook outside at a view and, you know, and not in a box? Because Sakura's was, like, at the time when I cooked there, no windows. It's dark. At the time, you could smoke cigarettes in there. So people are smoking cigarettes and blowing smoke in your face. I mean, it was like, I'm, like, totally, like, the anti-restaurant. the anti, like less is more with my business. Like, I won't take any more parties. I made the decision with my business. Last year, I was taking parties of over 20. I was doing 30. I decided nowadays, like, no, I want to keep it at 20 because that's where my quality comes in. It's not about, like, being, like, these greedy owners trying to make a bunch of money. It's about
quantity,
like, having fun and the integrity of Teflon, the soul of it. I might have deviated from, like, the true history of it, but I'm making it fun for me and my customers, and I'm still holding the integrity of it. I'm not trying to cheapen it down with crazy things and as people seeing through time, you know. And, you know, God bless Samurai for what they did to that location. I went there during the construction. I came across the owner, and I didn't know if he was like me or not. And he was like, hey, chick, look what we've done. And I was stunned how beautiful it was in there. Like, from what it was to what it is now, I was like, wow, that's great. But at the same time, I'm like, I never am going to work for anyone ever again. You know, like, you know, I already made that decision. Like, it's a decision, you know, like, it's the point where you decide, like, I'm done with owners. I'm taking complete creative control of my career. Because the proof was in the pudding. Everywhere that I worked, it was just request, request, request. You know, and that's no fluke if you're getting requests all the time. And I'm like, imagine if I could just cook for one of these requests on my own terms. I wouldn't have to come to the restaurant and cook 15 tables a night, you know? So that was another vision of Flying Knives, was just like, don't cheapen it down. Just like, you literally have one full day to cook one beautiful table at a beautiful location. That was like another vision of it, you know, because it makes it exciting for me. I still get anxiety every time I cook. 30 years later, I still like, oh my God, I got a party tomorrow. I can't sleep tonight. I'm like excited and scared and anything can happen. But that's the beauty of life. You know, like when you're in a restaurant, it becomes stagnant. You become a robot. You start cooking on automatic, you know, and you're sort of like, yep, okay, go through the motions. And it was hard to fake that.
You lose the love.
I'm killing it and making all these requests and having to fake it, you know, and I couldn't do it. But I, you know, like, I don't know.
That's where it's at, man. I mean, no, shit, that's, you know, what's funny is, like, you didn't know me when we started this conversation. I didn't know you. This conversation could have went off the rails easily, and here we are, man, like 40 whatever minutes later, and we've not even honestly scratched the surface, have we?
And that's another thing too, like, I think a lot of chefs, they'll reach out to me. I mean, and I think I just, God bless my branding and how well I just treated everyone. They reach out to me. You know, 90% of the people really like, how did you start your business? Where was it? And I was really like, long story short, I basically say, get a grill, get a table, start going, man, start branding and market yourself. And when I did Flying Knives, I literally did like one auction locally. Like, I put it, but they didn't get school, they promoted it so well, people got the visual of it, and then it just started to happen. And I just told people, I go, it just takes one good post, really slick, just make it slick and just let people to see what you're doing and they'll get it. You don't have to be this celebrity chef. People just want the teppanyaki at their house. That's the thing. Not one person, I've done so many parties, Flying Knives is, I've literally done, and literally, for the record, maybe 100 parties since I started. No shit. And every single time, everyone was like, this is just the best idea ever. And I'm like, isn't it? I mean, teppanyaki at home. I would hire that. You know, like, hell yeah. Wouldn't that be cool? Like, you get your friends together, you get a location, you get a cool chef. Guys like us who know how to cook, and we cook with passion, and people would pay, and I'm not that expensive, and that's another thing too. People will be like, oh my God, I can't afford you, and then we go through my pricing, and they're like, that's actually not that bad. But going back to what I'm saying, a lot of chefs would be like stunned when I'm talking to them. They're like, I can't believe you're actually talking to me. And I'm like, no, I'm accessible to any tip on if out there, because we need to move this movement forward. It's not like, you watch Food Network now. That's another reason why I tried to get on Chopped. I felt like Teppon presence. They did a show back in the early 2000s, and it was just not done right. And I felt like, why have we not been represented? You know, because I feel like we're like this unsung, like we're like a redheaded stepchild in the cooking world for some reason. Like, they didn't respect us enough to be on like TV.
And about
like,
it.
Some of the best chefs I've ever came across are all Teppon chefs, and they would ghost any of these Iron Chefs any day of the week, you know. And this is true shit. Like, I've come across Teppon chefs where I've literally stolen their recipes. I'm like, wow, man, this is the shit. You know, he made it for a family meal, and suddenly I'm using it at Roku, you know, like, hey, how about this little topping for this? And they're like, where'd you learn? Literally in the back kitchen.
Yeah, passed down from generations.
Just sort of threw it together on the hip, and you know, and
all right, I gotta ask you, Mike. I gotta ask you, how much what are your fees? How much will it cost to come and put on a show for a party?
So, okay, 10 so at the house. For all the Teppon chefs out there who want to know how I price it, I have a base price. So when I first started my business, I was sweating it because I was offering like a la carte, anything under the sun, and I figured to streamline it to a price per head. And the price per head will encompass everything. And when it encompasses everything, that's drive time, setup. And when setup means they don't have to rent their tables or chairs, we have, I bought all that already. So I'm $100 a head. So that's the base price. So what does that $100 a head get you? Well, that gets you either steak and shrimp, teens, plus vegetables, fried rice, soup, salad. They'll get like a steak and shrimp, soup, salad, fried rice. That also includes me driving out, setting up, the use of all my equipment, the use of everything. So the menu I ran last summer was the 125 menu. That's where everyone got a little bit of everything. They got steak, shrimp, chicken. The family combo.
And happy family combination.
I quit like bullshitting them, being like, well, I can offer this. I was like, okay, happy look, family. Here's how it is. I'm a pretty well-known teppanyaki chef. If you're going to have me come out there, pay $125. With that $125, that's everything under the sun. That's the shopping that I do, the setup. You get steak, shrimp, chicken, soup, salad, veggies, fried rice. The only thing that you need to provide is your own alcohol. That's one thing I just don't go down. That's not my liability. I'm already worried about my business as it is. I don't want to worry about alcohol. And so that's right after I give them that speech, then I tell them, and I understand some people are vegetarians. So that's the ballpark menu. And then we work a menu from there. And that menu goes up and down because some people are like, well, God, my daughter doesn't do beef, but she does this. And my mom's a gluten. And so that's where you have to get Shark Tank smart on your pricing. So then that's another thing about the business. You have to be aware about where you're buying your product and what you're putting in as your price per head. So since everything's already paid for, the only thing I'm really paying for is like my van payment. I factor that price in. And then I feel like anything over 125, people kind of get a little bit like, that's a little bit out of my comfort zone, you know, blah, 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 blah. So like I keep it right at that level where, and I'll put it this way. I could probably maybe charge $300 a head because I bring out like the premium ingredients. I do the show. I do the magic show. I don't want the stress of having to put on a $300 a head person show. I like the $100, $125 a head. That's what I'm comfortable at because that's what I feel like I justly bring. You know, I bring the full show. I don't cut corners. I cook steak. I'm not messy on the grill. I'm cleaning it all the time. I treat it like I was in Hollywood filming, you know, and they get the very best of me. Like when I'm done with these parties, not only am I physically exhausted, I'm emotionally invested where like I'm like exhausted mentally. Like I don't sleep the night before. I do the party.
You feel like family.
And then I get home, then I'll do my post. And after I do my post, I'm like, I can't believe I just did like every part. I don't look at it as like, oh, another party. Like every party is this tiny little victory for Flying Knives because it was the best that I possibly could have gave.
And you get better as you go, and you get better as you go. That's awesome, man. It is. It is.
Yeah,
you ever need help, man? Shit, I'll help you.
Guys out there, all right. They'll probably listen to this podcast. And the only thing right now is the parties that I'm booking are small. You know, like people are still a little skittish right now about booking anything over 10. So these parties of 8, I can pretty much handle by myself. But I have 2 parties. If it's anything over, if it's a 2-digit, another chef I'm training right now, really tainted by him. Dream would be to ban the brand of Flying Knives, but the problem with that is I need to know like if someone
not with an old
in head. Another party under the name Flying Knives, I need to know that this rock star is given us just as much love as I would if I'm at that party. So it's and the problem with that is the fine chef.
He looks good. Caliber, looks good so far.
Like you guys are already busy because you're in demand. So it's like, and I'm not at the level where I can fully employ his full time. I lost a chef last summer. I'll give a shout out to him. Chase Sheridan, the white boy chef. He's in Texas right now. I was just starting to pick up my business. And then I was just making just enough where I could employ like a helper. But like if I ever hire a chef, I want to pay them what they're worth. You know, and so I'd expect to pay them what I would want to get paid. And so like, but that's the problem. I'm a tad expensive, you know, because you know, but I bring it, I justify it because mm-hmm. I bring the love. It's all passion. If there's not one night where I felt like easy, you know, it was just like, fuck, I did it. You know, that's every party I've ever done.
Never is, man.
We just make it look easy.
We just make this shit look easy.
I think that breeds a lot of resentment and hate on teppanyaki pages because here I am posting like, oh, I'm the greatest. But really, like, if they really knew, like, I actually have a videographer that does some of my YouTube stuff and he's really good, but like, I wanted to hire him more when this whole breakout thing happened, but like I was kind of told him like if people really knew what was put into like if I had to do a party 2 days from now, the day before the party is literally like shopping and kind of doing the prep and you know getting my cart ready because I do magic shows and laser. I gotta charge my lasers and get all this stuff done and you know like there's 1,000 moving parts that happen to Flying Knives party literally before I start putting the first thing on the grill.
You sound like a little kid in a county store right now.
Right?
That's awesome, man. I love it. I love it, man. It's that passion. It's that passion that got you to where you're at right now. It's that drive.
I'm not, there's so many more talented chefs than me, but there's not as many chefs that has as much tenacity as I do. I have so much like, oh, I'll prove.
There's always going to be a bigger dog.
You know, in the very beginning, even when I was doing the Teppanyaki Takedown show, the owner of Mizu's, she was literally like, why you? Yeah, Sue. She was literally, she's
oh,
in the video.
Sue?
You see her for a split second just like snarling at me, you know, and it was, and because she literally was just like, she never liked me from the get-go. And I think because her
didn't like me. She didn't appreciate it.
Was one of the first chefs that was like, he was there that night when he was like, congratulations, you're a chef. And then he got me a job in Olympia. There used to be a Sakura's in Olympia. And when you work there, you work by yourself. So you had to do the prep, you had to cook, you had to kind of do the cashier. He got me a job out there. So I think she kind of resented me because I was his friend.
That's the one next to KFC.
So she hated me. She was like, they're doing a show on you. Why? And I remember the words clearly. She says, why you? You're not even that good. And that was the night I battled Daryl.
And that was the night where I really killed it. Like, I thought I did a really good job. Like, I kind of felt the editing was weird because I felt like, well, you didn't catch this trick. You didn't do this one trick. And I did the hacky sack fire stick off this, and you didn't get that. Like, but I was just sort of going with what the producer edited, and I was just sort of like, whatever. And nowadays when I do videos, like, I have so much creative control. Like, no, I want this shown. This is the angle. This is what I, these are the tricks that I want done. You know, there's a big step. There's a big growth you have to go through. Not just being the best trickster, you have to be hella mature and branding and responsible. And yeah.
That's good stuff, man. What do you think for the first episode, bro?
I think we did good.
I think we did good.
Yeah, I think we did. I think we kind of covered it all.
I don't think this is gonna be the last one anyway. Right. So
we still have to talk about the whole
because there's a lot of stuff I want to talk about. And I also wanted to touch base on. I don't want to get into it now because I got a couple other things I got to do. But one thing I did want to touch base on. Fuck it, let's get into it right now. Is a lot of my friends. Well, I'm not gonna say a lot. I'd say several guys that I know across the states. They do not want to go back to the restaurant. They don't want to go back to working for that employer because they showed them no love during the past couple months. I don't know. I just work where I work at. I work over there. Fuck it. I work at Samurai's. And it's very, very close to where I live. I live over off of Hipkins and Silicon. Yeah. So it's like a 10-minute drive, man. As close to drive. Because I've lived in this place for 2 years where I live at now, this apartment that I got or whatever. So I was driving out to Olympia, and I was driving out to Bellevue, and I was driving. Mm. I drove out to Bellevue when that snow hit last year. So I work at where I work at now, man. It's convenient.
Yeah, like I
it's
said, they're not bad people. They pay solid, but it's just a question of like I don't really want to have to answer.
It's all legit
anymore. I did that, you know, for too many years. So nothing against them. They the owner. You know, he builds beautiful restaurants and the chefs there, they're all solid chefs.
They're nice and
say that for the record.
They care about the place too.
The only thing is I cannot
it's clean.
I just can't have something like I'm married now. My wife is she's my boss. One boss is enough, man.
A lot of us are
right.
A lot of us are divorced because of this shit too. So
she's been carrying this too. She helped me kind of get out. When my contract was coming up at Roku, because I always signed 2-year contracts. I did that at Nobu, and because I always just feel like keep it moving. Because if I wanted to get where I wanted to get, you can't be stagnant. So I would sign 2-year. I did that at Kobe's. At Kobe's, I would just do monthly, like 4 months. You know, so like. You know, my wife, you know, she was basically at this point, she was just like, you're ready to go home. You're ready to start your business. She's been pretty much the voice of reason because I always usually make the decisions kind of passionately and that's bit me in the ass. And so when she says, you're ready, that's when I know I'm ready. So that's when it all happens. So like, you know, I definitely take her, you know, into consideration.
What does she do?
In any decision I make. So she does her own like marketing sales online, and she's very successful at that. Her business is called Monate, and she's really high in her company, and you know, and she's sort of like the buffer, you know, because like my business is
nice,
seasonal. Man. Like, I'll make all this crazy money. I mean, in Washington, like, so shout out to Ibaki Catering guys. Those guys in California, they work year round. Here in Washington, I'm pretty much busy from like May to September. So like I'm making all this crazy money, but then I'm also trying to like put back into the business. This is what pays for the chairs and the upgrades and the napkins that we use and stuff like that. So like, you know, so she's been the buffer of like, you know, just pretty much carrying the household, and she's done very well. And we've been married 15 years and 2 kids, and we've been there at the most.
Congratulations,
by the way, bro. Congratulations. Like one day away from homeless to like where we're at now. And you know, she's just as much fire as I am. So I think that's why we feed off that, and we know how to channel that. We better ourselves with that. And definitely having kids, you know, like, you know, if you're on the same page, you know, we're, that's a big deal, being on the same page with your significant other. That's huge. That's huge. You know, so like
my daughters wow, will be turning 21 and 23 this year.
Right age.
Yeah.
Be soon.
Yeah. Right around the corner. Right around the corner. You know what, man? That's a good note to end this segment
Thank
on.
Thank you.
I appreciate you doing this with me, Mike.
So you're gonna be? Are you gonna post this on?
And I'll get in touch with you. Yeah, I'm gonna post it. I'll post it here in about 30 minutes. I'll just go through and add a couple little fingerprints on it, and then it'll probably be up within the next 30 minutes.
I just now followed you.
I'll let
you on like the international or?
It's in, yeah, I'm on Teppanyaki International and Hibachi servers and all those. Man, I think I'm on like four of those sites.
I'm gonna get from this.
But you can find See if I get a job again.
I think I kept it fairly clean. I was being honest. You know, honestly, bro. I love every chef out there. So, I mean,
you know,
apologies, man, if I come off abrasive.
We're the same way. You ain't got to apologize, bro. It's our shit. But again, man, I appreciate you taking time out your day. And
Sweet. All right,
we'll get together again soon, I'm sure.
Thank you.